Let's get started today. The first question, you know, the rest of you might send me your pre-planning worksheets so that I can get a little more info about you. But before I get started, I want to find out if there's anything that's on your mind, anything by way of discovery which you have learned from looking at the videos or going through the guidebook or just in general, if there's anything on your mind. So let's go around the horn and Brent, you're in my upper left-hand corner, so let's start with you. Anything on your mind?
I mean, for sure. I mean, the big thing for me, and, you know, we kind of talk about it is, you know, I've built up this really large book of business with a lot of possibilities with a lot of clients in the future. And then, you know, I think it's important that you kind of understand our business model too. So maybe one of us can, you know, kind of give you some quick education on that. But
okay,
really what it comes down to is we do a lot of work with the public school system here, and I'm kind of like the liaison between, you know, our advisors and all the people who are able to make decisions, like the principals, the leadership people in the county. So for me, it's hard to figure out how to segment my book because I have a lot of people that play a lot of important roles in a lot of different ways.
Right.
So that's my issue.
Okay.
So yeah, just real quick, so you understand, Curtis, we all have over 1,000 clients. Like I have 1,000 and I have the least amount of clients on this call.
Wow. Like,
yeah, I think I'm at like almost 2,000 clients. I mean, sure, I don't talk to, you know, over half of them, I'm sure, routinely. It's impossible, but it's just like if I looked at putting like a top 100 list and I couldn't even get close to that because of all the future business that a school employee gets when they finish their career with the state of Florida.
Okay. Okay. All right. So well put, we'll cover that.
Curtis. So I think with what Brant's saying, I think obviously our model is less of, again, currently it's less of the advisory. It's not the majority of our business on a regular basis. Most of it is, let's just say the majority is annuities on life insurance. You know, we do have advisory and mutual fund accounts, but that's not generating the majority of our income currently.
Okay.
Right. Secondly, in that educator marketplace, we do have, there are clients, which I read in the book about butlers and things of that nature where they, you know, centers of influence may come in with your book. It's the gentleman that when the book was written, he cut out all the way down to 33 clients and he only gave up like 38,000 of his income.
Right.
He also, from what I'm reading, is when you cut out those remaining clients, like if Brandon or I, when we cut down to 100, you're basically giving those up completely to someone else to handle. Right. In our world, joint work and things of that nature on case consultation, case design, obviously as a leadership team too, comes in here and we're trying to figure out how to integrate that into the model. So for example, to give off our clients to a newer advisor, are they basically saying, I'm the new advisor handling your account? Or, hey, I'm handling your account for myself and my business partner, Michael Goldberg.
Right. So let's answer that right now. You know, when I worked as the national sales manager, for Merrill Lynch, private client, one of the things that they had me focus on was technology. You know, we had these mainframe driven technology capabilities, and I was a big proponent of more of an open architecture web-based platform. Okay. And so you had these legacy systems, and then you had the new way of doing things that we were trying to put together. Now, we couldn't completely trash the legacy system because there's just too much data there. So we had to operate two different systems for a while we began to move more toward a new way of doing things. So one of the things that, you know, might work, and I'll throw this out, is that, and you'll begin to understand this as the training starts to unfold, is, you know, can we get you down to 85 core relationships? Okay. Now, those 85 core relationships are going to be based on the principle of the 80-20 rule. And what does that mean? That means that, you know, 20% of your clients are going to generate 80% of your revenue. So I want you to be looking at who can generate 80% of your revenue, okay, as we begin to grow in a different direction and build a concierge practice. Now, the individuals that you might make a handoff to that might be members of your team would in essence be relationship managers for some of your clients, so that your clients are feeling that they are working with a team, with Bill Edwards, so to speak, being one of the relationship managers on that team, so that they're not going to lack or lose any service. But what you're going to do then is you're going to begin to start to refine the practice. Now, what I want you to do, just like you've just done just now, is definitely interject when you feel there are areas that I need to be aware of. So you've got great questions. I mean, if I can, you know, if I looked at the metrics and the key drivers of that business, I want you to flip the switch for a moment. It used to be in the industry that the driver of the business was the product, okay? It could be the insurance. It could be stocks and bonds. It could be mutual funds. It could be annuities. That was the driver. And in essence, that was a transaction. And once the transaction was done, then you had to go in and you had to go create another transaction. So what we want to do is see if we can, and if it makes sense, to begin to go through a period of reinvention a little bit that doesn't take away what you've done, what you've accomplished, but in essence move you into another direction, which is more of a holistic approach driven by planning. Okay. Now, what this means then is in the bigger picture, developing the concierge practice is using the concept of 12-4-2. What does that mean? That means that your affluent, your top clients that can, and we're going to talk about how we screen them, how we identify them, give you most of your business and have the potential to give you more. These clients are going to be treated the same. And we want you to have no more than 100 of these special relationships per advisor. Now, the concierge, part of the concierge practice is that they would receive 12 contacts. 4 of the 12 contacts will be reviews. 2 of them would be telephonic and two would be in-person reviews. Now, given the pandemic, you know, we're doing those two with maybe a Zoom call or some kind of visual interface. They get a 1 hour response to any problems with a 24 hour resolution. And they receive a financial plan or roadmap, if you will, with an eye on intergenerational planning. Now, when you begin to start to look at each relationship under that, we're going to show you how to craft agendas and how to look at your base of solutions to apply those solutions to those relationships. So that's a thumbnail sketch of where we're driving. Let me stop for a moment. And I know this is a little bit different, but you all have an opportunity to maybe drive some innovation at your organization a little bit on those principles.
All right. I got a question.
Yeah, sure.
It's like a relationship management. In our world, right? We don't really have, can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. We don't really have a budget in a sense to pay a salary. It's easier for to give up a portion of production and hire them as an advisor.
Right.
You see an issue with that?
No. In fact, I created a kind of a calculator software program based on teams where you can take the total production and look at payouts and forecast future growth based on that, look at recurring fee revenue streams and say, are we going to grow by 15% a year? We're going to grow by 25% a year. And we can do this in 8 minutes. And we can calculate the number of households, revenue per household, so on and so forth. So now you're going to get into this mindset of, as a leader, we're going to be flipping back and forth between the producer hat and the leader coach hat during our discussions. So your question is a good one. In fact, 100% of the teams I work with whether they be vertically integrated teams with you at the top of the food chain and then junior partners and associates. Okay. And each layer receives kind of a different compensation kind of scheme based on their performance. Okay. So then we start to get down to building these relationships. Now, ideally, what would I like to see? For example, when I looked at Lenny's profile, Lenny said that the average account had 500,000. Okay. So what I'd like to see you have is we have a concept called stair step in the stars. What does that mean? That means that you start with your baseline. I'm going to show you how to do that, where you take that 80-20 rule and you take the top 20% of your clients and you take the average amount of revenue that they give you. Okay. And if the average, or average assets that they have, if the average assets is 500,000, I'm going to get you to start thinking about identifying new relationships that can provide you with at least 750,000. And then we're going to move that up to 1 million. And then you're going to move it up to 1.5 million. And then you're going to move it to 2 million. So you're still going to see where you're working with 85 key relationships. Okay. So you're going to have to constantly right-size the book as you continue to move upstream with the relationships that you have. Now, look, when I started in the business, if they were living and breathing, I took them on as a client. Okay. And then it started to dawn on me. And I tell you, the other thing I did is we had an account called Ready Assets. It was a money market fund. And if they had $5,000 and could put it in there, boom, we took them. Then we came up with the cash management account, which was that holding vehicle, which was a combination of a brokerage account and a money market account. And it was a minimum of $20,000 to get in. And guess what? We discovered after 2 years that the minimum asset size in those accounts were $275,000. And then we started to raise and upgrade the level of relationship that we were capable of doing. Because what we find is the same amount of time it takes for you to deal with the person that has 2 million in assets is probably the same amount of time that it takes to deal with somebody with 500. Okay. How's that resonate with you so far? What I'm saying? Are you following me? Let me stop for a moment.
Yep. So I got one. When I was filling out my sheet, and I made her kind of a rough draft, so I got to send it to you. My question is, like, for mine and current, right? We have no minimum account size, no maximum number, like, it's basically nothing, right?
Right.
But if you look for goal for total assets, so right now, because of the way we're on certain cases, like we were talking about, I have $80 million in assets in my book of business.
Okay.
But maybe I'm only revenue producing on 15 million of those 80 million.
Okay.
So should I put goals should be what I'm revenue producing on in the next 12 to 24 months?
Yeah, I think that should be a goal. I think you should have a goal okay. So if I'm your manager, I'm going to say, what are the metrics by which we are going to measure you? What are the KPIs, key performance indicators, that actually drive your business? I think it's assets, it's clients, it's revenue per client, and it's your product mix. And it is, and how do we get to the product mix? We get to that via planning. So those are like your key performance indicators that tell me that your business is being driven by performance measures. Okay. So yeah, we can go down further and break it down and say, well, look, how much life insurance was done? What did we do in asset allocation? How much of our asset went to portfolio management, what went into mutual funds, so on and so forth. But those are the key performance indicators, right?
Yep.
I'm just throwing those out at the top of my head. That's the fuel in the tank that will drive your future.
Okay. Yeah, because like client acquisition right now for me isn't that high because I work basically my book of business.
Right.
Right. So I don't spend that much time on that. But when we do Supernova, then maybe I could spend more time recruiting and developing advisors to grow our team, which would help me, right? And help our team. So that, you know, that was. Right.
So now you put your manager hat on. Like I say, we'll go back and forth. You put your manager hat on and you say, well, what are the metrics that drive your leadership performance? And the metrics that drive your leadership performance are still going to be revenue, but a component of that might be your ability to recruit and bring in talent that can do revenue. Okay. It may be putting together fully functional teams that can drive revenue. It can mean having a strategy where people are taking a holistic approach around planning and having everybody implement a concierge practice. Okay. Those would be what leadership then does to, you know, so the, your role as leader, you plan, you lead, you organize, you control, you're the business strategist, you're the coach. So now what you're doing is you're formulating a strategy that's consistent and compatible that people can roll into. Look, I started in the business and my manager said, you know, here's a desk, here's a phone, go do it. That wasn't a strategy.
Yep.
Agreed.
Okay.
Curtis.
Yeah.
Just, so let's say we segment our books. I think this may be a big thing and we get down to just say 85 people, right?
Okay.
Whatever everyone's magic number is.
Right.
Our thought is, let's say someone who's not in our top 100, you know, we hand it to a different advisor. Is it okay to remain on a case, or you're saying to give up all the revenue from those cases? Or is it, hey, we come up with a split, the new advisor does this, we get a piece of it, and but we're just not building the relationship as much.
Andy, look, when you go out on a case and you win the business, you split the business. You decide what the split is going to be. When you give somebody a relationship, you split the business. So in essence, you have a recurring fee revenue stream. So, cause what we're trying to get you to do now is you've got to right size the business so that we can free up time so that you can execute on your strategy. So, and if you have 1,000 relationships, you got no time.
Agreed. There's,
I think too, just as a statement, you can say if I'm right or wrong, Curtis, but
okay,
if we don't annuitize our business, then it's kind of useless in a sense where, right, if I'm just doing it, if I'm doing advisory and I'm doing annuities, I should be taking the trail on the annuity too, because I'm servicing that relationship. So instead of just taking an upfront one-time payment.
Right. So yes, an annuitized business is recurring fee revenue stream. It takes the elasticity of earnings out of the practice. You now have predictable income coming in. So when you do your forecast, you can say, I've got $500,000 that's spoken for this year that I know that I can predict. And now I can budget, I can hire, I can recruit, I can pay myself based on recurring fee revenue. Okay.
Gotcha. And then for those 12 calls, let's say, do you set those up for the whole year or you set it up each month? Is it the same?
So what we would do, and we're kind of jumping ahead and that's okay.
Oh, okay.
But that's okay. What we're doing is the calls, you carve out your time, which might be the third Tuesday of each month at 10 o'clock. Okay. You're going to meet with Mary Smith. On Wednesday, and so you're going to schedule, if you look at the schedule, and if you have calls four times per day, that's 20 per week. 20 per week times four is about 80 of your very best people. Now, where that works is you're now elevating your service model. We're going to move into this thing called the enthusiastic endorse model and COIs and client acquisition. There's no cold calling Supernova, but these people are going to be so enamored with the service that you provide that they're going to bring you more assets. Now, do you have an asset gathering tool at AXA that you use? Do you have some form of cash management account, which is a combination of a brokerage account, checking account with a Visa debit card or American Express card attached to it? Do you have a product such as that?
Our LPL platform offers it, but I can tell you, I don't think a single person in our South Florida branch uses it.
Okay. So, what's going to happen is, all the affluent clients that are out there, and these accounts typically would have an unlimited check writing, capability. They would have automated bill pay. They would have, you'd get the statements each month. They would be able to look at the spectrum of their portfolio, how their assets are allocated, that sort of thing.
Yep.
And they would have this one view. Now I'll tell you what your competitors are doing. Is they have a aggregated capability to where they can pull in your clients' relationships with the bank, with the brokerage, with other firms, and have one view of everything that that client has. And that's called account aggregation. And initially the name was called Buy All Accounts, but you know, somebody bought them out, but that is the feature.
And I noticed that bigger accounts, that's what they wanted, and we don't have that. And that's been a frustrating pinpoint for a lot of those people.
Okay. So, yeah, which means it limits maybe some of the assets that you can bring in. But what you want to be able to do is, look, clients always have money in motion. And this is what I mean by that. They get bonuses. They get bump ups in retirement. They get windfalls. They get pension money coming in. They exercise stock options. They sell businesses. All kinds of things create money in motion. So the rationale for the monthly contact then is to make sure you don't miss out. You know, here's a story of a client. He owned a bunch of gas stations. And between when he heard from his financial advisor and then the next time, which was 4 months, he sold the business for a net of $5 million. Goldman Sachs sweeps in, grabs the money. And so when he did get next, we sold our business. We're moving to Florida. And the guy was like, oh, wow. And I was like, I wish I had been in touch with that affluent individual. Okay. Missed opportunity. So those are some of the war stories out there.
Do you remember this person's name? I can reach out to them.
Well, no, I don't remember the name. It was somebody in the Midwest for sure.
I know, but, I'm joking.
But yeah, but this happens all the time. And it's probably happened to you. When somebody says, look, I just sold my business. Or a spouse says, I just lost my husband, and you know, in addition to the life insurance we had with you, we had another, you know, $300,000 policy that just rolled in. So, you know, what do we do? You're my advisor. Okay. So how comfortable are you now taking on that advisory role and being the quarterback and interfacing with the other team members that that client may have providing advice?
So that's are we going to go over the conversation that you have with that client so that it's like a seamless transition?
Sure. Well, there's some things we should cover before we get into it. So let's back up for a moment, and I'm going to write down your question, which is kind of the script that we use. You know, but it's going to go something like this. Look, the nature of our practice has evolved. We've been working with a consultant on delivering a concierge practice to our very special clients. And in that regard, we're working with just a limited number of relationships to provide what we call a concierge service. And what does this mean? This means that I'm going to be providing you with 12 monthly contacts. And these are going to be check-in calls. We're going to discuss your portfolio. We're going to discuss your financial plan, make sure everything is in order, and on plan implementation, making sure that we are implementing things according to your goals and your objectives. I'm going to be providing you with 4 reviews, and 2 of those reviews will be face-to-face, or if we're still in the pandemic mode, we're going to be using a virtual call for those reviews. And I'm going to be providing you a 1-hour response to any issues or problems, whether they be questions about tax, insurance, portfolio management, so on and so forth, or the general state of the economy. And we're going to provide intergenerational planning, where we start to look at, you know, what your trust looks like, how we're going to handle things with your survivors, with your kids, so on and so forth. How does that sound to you, Mrs. Jones? Okay, so that's kind of the script. You can tailor it to your own level of comfort. Okay. All right. Now, let's get into some of the material for week one. But I like this dialogue. This is great. So in Supernova, there really are no segmented clients. There's no A book, B book, C book, D book. All clients are treated the same. We have, and what we do is we screen the clients we keep. Those are going to be the 85 that are going to be the core of your book. Okay. We're going to look at their level of production, the assets that are available to manage as a screen, likability. It can't be like, oh boy, the phone rings. It's Bill Edwards. I don't know if I want to pick that one up. So it's got to be likability. They got to be trustworthy in that they take your advice. They accept your advice. They're profitable. And there's an opportunity for future growth. It could be a medical practice. It could be, you know, this business owner that whose cash flow is just growing by leaps and bounds, and they have the potential to be a center of influence. Now, not all your clients are going to be centers of influence, but some are. So here's a quick story. I'm coaching an FA, and I said, you've got to get 6 centers of influence. And I explained the center of influence, and she says, well, I know somebody who's president at the chamber. And I said, well, set up a meeting, have a dialogue and find out who the 10 most affluent members are, and would he be willing to introduce you to them over time? Well, bottom line is this guy had a radio show. He's put her on that, on the radio show. She's doing speaking engagements on wealth management, and he has referred, you know, 8 clients to her. Okay. So that's how you work a center of influence. A center of influence has the capability of providing you with 12 relationships, each one. Now you multiply that by 6, which I'm going to ask you to think about getting. That's 72 new relationships. But what they are is they are at equal to or better than the 85 of your core. Because you're going to educate that center of influence about the type of client you enjoy working with. So that's how you're going to begin to move your book and your business into that new direction. Now, sometimes there are households that are connected with another household, meaning you got to keep Aunt Susie. If you're going to deal with Mr. Smith, you're going to have to deal with Aunt Susie too. And Aunt Susie doesn't live up to the asset expectations that you have. We call them butlers, okay? And a butler gets a different level of service. They get a 4-1 service. They get 4 calls a year, and they get 1 appointment. Now, one of the things that Cindy is going to do, I would say after our 3rd session, is she's going to give you a way to calendarize these calls in our system. And you should go through it, look at it, and I would suggest that you have your assistant on the call, on these calls, if you think that's appropriate. Most of the folks I work with, they have their assistant on these calls for this period of time as well. So you have to think about, do you want to have them involved? Okay. So 3 butlers equals 1 client. You know, so you can't go in and have, if you decide that you're going to level off at 85 and you've got 24 butlers, well, every 3 butlers is equal to 1 household relationship in terms of time commitment.
So when you're segmenting the book, yeah, right? Previously in the past, I have a client that, you know, she's got net worth around $3 million, but she drives me crazy, right? And she doesn't listen. Everything is she's unhappy about. So I tried to fire her as a client. I said, maybe you're better off somewhere else. Right. Or I tried to hand her off. And then I did that, you know, after she said, hey, you shouldn't work at this company. This company's terrible, blah, blah, blah. I said, well, I'm not leaving, so maybe you should leave. And then she started bawling, crying, and said she would do whatever I tell her to do after she'd ever been with me. So how do I get rid of that client like that over a period of time? Or do I just say, hey, I'm not servicing these accounts anymore and hand them off? Or?
So look, we call these courageous conversations. Okay. All of a sudden you get backed into a point where you have to have a courageous conversation with somebody, and you have to lay out the ground rules of how the relationship is going to work. Okay. And, you're going to say to her, sometimes look, I kind of throw out the empathy rule. The empathy rule is we're in the midst of a pandemic. She's not going to the bridge club with the ladies. She's at home all alone. She may have lost her spouse. Her kids can't come and see her or visit her. I'm just painting out the scenario.
Yep.
And so the first is empathy. I understand how you feel. And there are many clients that feel the same way that you do. But now we've got to turn the corner here. And I'm going to set you up on a regular call schedule. And I'd like you to put it on your calendar. See, some of these people, they're not even going out playing golf with their friends or bocce ball or whatever. All that stuff is over. So it's like you wake up in the morning and you're by yourself and you go to bed at night and you're by yourself. They're emotional. So you need to understand what is the emotion. Now, if you can't deal with it, then you have to then have a courageous conversation. A $3 million account might be of value to somebody who is willing to put up with that and deal with it. But you've got to mellow them out. And the way you mellow them out, I understand how you feel. You got to show the empathy. Okay. And they get on a regular call schedule and you spend just that amount of time with them, but you've got to take control of the conversation. And the way you take control of the conversation is an agenda goes out before that call, at least 3 to 5 days prior to the call. It's going to discuss the elements of what you're going to talk about on that call. After the call takes place, they receive an executive summary. The executive summary, okay, talks about this is what we agreed to, this is what we discussed, and these are the next steps. Okay, now, you're going to have a folder for each client, each of the 85. And you know, you're going to, when you show up for work, you got 4 folders on your desk. You open it up. You know what the agenda is. You know what you're going to talk about. Like clockwork. After the call, you're typing up the email. This is what we talked about. This is what we discussed. These are the next steps. Email goes out. Copy is printed. Goes into your file. So now you already have your agenda for the next call. Okay. So I asked you a question in a couple of different ways.
That's good. Because it could be that the communication isn't there, so that makes sense.
Yeah. And I wrote an article, and I'm going to make a note to get it to you, and it was really about showing empathy during a period of this COVID-19. And what we found is there has been a lack of empathy being shown. You know, people are going through it. And what that's going to do is it's going to bring you closer to people. They're going to think more highly of you when you take that approach. But I've got a whole article I wrote about it. You know, it was written, I think, maybe in February or March, but it was like I took what I was going through and tried to walk in the client's shoes. Okay. And so when I wrote it, I was thinking, okay, I can't go to the gym. So I went to my storage unit and I pulled out dumbbells out of my storage unit and a weightlifting bench so that I could exercise. I couldn't do any treadmill work, so I started doing my walks. I couldn't go to the movies, so I started streaming Netflix. Okay. I couldn't go to restaurants. So I started looking up my recipes, you know, on all recipes and cooking my meals. You know, I was going through a period of reinvention.
Gotcha. And
that's the point I'm making.
Okay. So we have, let's say we have besides ourselves.
Okay.
Five other advisors that are willing to buy into moving forward with this type of strategy, right? To segment their books.
Right.
That may also have 1,000 clients like we do.
Right.
So in a sense of the structure of what is like the base where you have the financial advisor, the relationship person, maybe a junior, you know, what would you think would be the core structure of each one of those teams initially?
Well, look, some teams are as large as 10 people. Some are as small as 3. Mm-hmm. And what we are really recommending is that each team member have no more than 100 relationships.
Gotcha.
Because if they have any more than that, if you can't deliver a concierge practice, you know, it's impossible. There's no time.
Yep.
So the concierge practice is going to be your pipeline to lever up. You know, one client, if all of a sudden you got a client with $3-5 million in assets with lots of needs, think about how many clients would you replace to get that one? Would it be 5 or 6? Would it be 7? Would it be 10? Okay.
Gotcha.
Okay.
So like, let's say we start with the 3. What should those, the obviously myself or one of us.
Okay.
A relationship person and so how does that, you know, what do you?
Basically, you can call them whatever you like. I tend to call them, they can be junior partners, mm-hmm. where they share in the equity in the team, or they can be relationship managers that share in the revenue of the team.
Okay. Gotcha.
And then you begin to work on a team split. You create a contract. The contract is about what happens in the event of a divorce. Who gets what? You know, how's this relationship going to work? What are the expectations? What are the expectations? So you have to kind of create this contract. Now, in the book I wrote on teaming, I have a chapter that talks about, this contract. Let me see if I had a book on my desk here. I'll tell you what chapter it's on.
Yeah, only Mike has been through an equitable divorce so far, so.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's a
multiples.
Prenup. It's a prenup for your team members. Okay?
Yep.
So, chapter 9, team contract and agreement.
Okay. Excellent.
Supernova Advisor Teams, a pathway to excellence.
You got it in my bag, so I'll check it out.
It'll give you the elements of what that ought to look like.
Okay.
Andrew has a bunch of those Mario books.
I have it.
Okay. Good. Yep. All right. Let's see here. So,
Curtis.
Yeah.
So let's just say real quick, because I know this is a big thing for us working with the schools and making providing a concierge service and providing the right service. Right. So we broke it down and we said we had 85 clients, let's just say, that we're going to reach out to once a month, right?
Right.
And then let's, so for every 3 butlers, that equals 1 core client, right?
Right.
So a butler could be like someone maybe, like let's take a principal of a school or someone that's more of a center of influence.
Right.
That could be a butler and we're just reaching out to them 4 times a year, not necessarily the same. And you could have 45 butlers and then you'd have a total of 100 core clients.
Yeah. So a center of influence, you're going to try to talk to them once a month. They're going to get a separate folder and you're going to educate the center of influence about your team and its capabilities, its vision, its platform, how you do business.
Okay. Okay. So the center of influence wouldn't be a butler?
Not necessarily, no. But it could.
Gotcha. The
center of influence doesn't have to be a client, but he can be, or she can be.
Gotcha.
You know, like in the example I gave you, the president of the chamber wasn't a client of this young woman, but he was willing to help her.
Yep.
He was willing to provide her clients.
Gotcha. Okay. That worked.
Okay. So let's see here. I want to make sure I'm covering, so we have a, now to introduce the concept of 1242, you're going to have to practice, drill and rehearse it. And you're going to have to use it to get people comfortable with it. We have a sample letter that introduces your new service model to clients. And, we have a sample letter for introducing your new service model to prospects. Okay.
Yeah. Quick question, Curtis. Do clients ever say, A, I don't want this, or B, do they say, how come you've never done this with me in the past?
Yeah, of course. Absolutely. And that's a very, very good question. And your response can be, you know, we've taken the time to invest in our practice and we hired a consultant, that advised us on how we can best deliver, our platform of services in a unique way and a better way to our clients. And that means we're going to be working with a limited number of relationships and you've been selected to participate with us. So, you know, you can use something similar to that.
Okay.
So yeah, you're gonna get, you know, why didn't you do this all along? Now that I know that, I'm going to bring you another $2 million worth of assets. Okay. But see, we want you to have your team. We want you to have your service capability all organized. Okay. Now I'm going to be giving you, a business plan and strategy document that's now going to speak to your value proposition, your goals and key initiatives that you're going to work on. And quite frankly, every little pod or team that you create, you know, should have a business plan and strategy. So you're going to coach your people on how to do this stuff. Okay. Imagine having 10, 15, 20, 25 raving fans that have a unique process and concierge practice, what's that going to do to your business? It's going to be unbelievable. All right. Stair step to the stars. We talked about that. And some firms with some very, very small relationships, they're turned over to a call center and the call center manages those relationships. Okay. And you may not have that. So now one of the things to think about, now I don't know if it makes sense for you, but should you have a team of three people, their expectations are a lot different than yours. They're not driven, but they're very service-minded, and create your own.
Yes. Small relationships.
Okay. Where they go into the pool, they get handled, they get managed, they get, you know, serviced.
So do we, are we giving each of those people 100 people, or they can have the whole big pot?
Well, don't give them all of them at once because they won't handle it, but you begin to start to, you know, give them 5, give them 10, they make contact, so on and so forth. And so you did, I did that in one of the branches I worked with. We called it a CSD unit, a client services department, where that client, they got calls, they got service. And the other thing is if anybody had anything of complexity, then it got referred up back to one of you guys. Okay. Then we went to the national call center. Okay. These were folks that, were hired in. They worked for about, you know, 25 or 30,000 and they got bonused. So, but they were very service oriented.
So like we had a group of, 4 advisors that we tried to roll out a little program, and we were giving them, 50 leads a month of existing clients in our book to call and try to generate new business, do a profile, do a financial plan. And then we did a 60-40 split on any new business.
Right. How'd that work?
Right. So, first advisor did nothing with the list. Another advisor liked the idea and then ended up partnering with a senior advisor instead who needed help. So that actually was a real good win. And then the third one has been doing great calling consistently, but it's still in its infancy. So it hasn't generated a ton of revenue, but it created a lot of good contacts with clients that haven't been called for a while.
Okay. So you're 2-for-1. That's not bad. That's pretty good. But what I wouldn't do is I wouldn't give somebody 50 leads. You know, I'd give them, you know, the philosophy is inspect what you expect. I'm going to give you 10 leads. Report back to me on what you did, what you accomplished, what were the results. Then I'm going to give you 10 more. And then another 10. And then another 10. And you might get to 50. In the month. Okay.
Gotcha.
So what you're doing is you're going to ask questions. When they said that they had the need, how did you respond? Well, I told them I'd get back to them in a week. You didn't take the time to explore the need. You didn't drill down to figure out what was motivating that client or what issues they were dealing with. I think you need to strengthen your profiling skills. You know, you're going to uncover things in people that on the surface, you know, but you got to drill down.
So okay.
Now that's, again, sometimes I want you to be able to distinguish between when I'm coaching you and when I'm telling you to put on your leadership hat. Okay. Cause I told you we're going to integrate that in our conversation. So great question. I kind of like the way that this is going so far. It seems to be working.
Curtis, so let's role play this. Let's say we have new advisors and we do what we call a communication night every Monday from 4 to 6 p.m. So they should be communicating with clients.
Okay.
If I gave them 10 leads, which I think would be good to reach out to during this time, and then afterwards we can touch base and drill into it, that may be easier than saying, here's 50, and then we report back at the end of the month, let me know how it went. Do you think that's a better system to say, hey, Brant, I know you're a new advisor. Here's 10 leads. They're clients. We haven't reached out to them in a long time. Please reach out and then we'll touch base afterwards to review it.
Right. So yeah, what you want to do is you want to find out, have you set up calls? What happens on the first contact, the second contact, the third contact, the fourth, and how we're moving toward a close? Then I think what you want to do is you want to find out, how it went. And what that's going to do is it's going to reinforce positive behaviors among your troops.
Yeah. I also think new advisors don't really know exactly what to ask or what to look for on a review call. So it's our job to help coach them to, ask the right questions to figure out what else is, happening in that house.
Exactly. Look, one of the things, I had this stuff down as a producer, down to a science. There was only 17 objections that a client would have. So I practiced them, I drilled them, I rehearsed them. Then I had my script, on how to identify a hot button, to identify the need. And those are the things that you have to do on basic skills. The basic selling track is creative opening, permission to proceed, handling any objections, try to provide the a little bit of a value prop, what you do, features, benefits, handling objections again, and closing for an opportunity for the next call. So do your people know that? Or are they winging it? I want them to think that they're in the courtroom, they're the lawyer, they got a client who's wrongfully convicted of a murder, and they've got to get them off. So they've got to be rehearsed. They've got to be practiced when they go in. Look, San Francisco's only 49 square miles. And if you're not at your best, pretty soon you'd be cold calling the whole city. Now, in our approach, in our process, there's no cold calling. Everything is generated through referrals and developing centers of influence. And so once we coach you on how to do that, then you're going to coach them on how to do that. We have 7 or 8 acquisition methodologies that we'll be coaching you on.
Awesome.
So I know you want everything today, but it's going to take a little bit of time.
A good start. That's a good start. It gives us a lot to it's real helpful. I think it gives me a little better guide on how to start kind of moving forward. Some good ideas. So thanks.
Yeah, that's what, we're looking at what we're working toward, here. So, one of the things that the last thing, and we're going over time a little bit that I need to cover and then I'll let you go and I apologize, is, look at your ideal client, read chapter 1, set your minimum and your max. Look at your target minimum is the average of your top 20% of your practice. Top 20% of your practice. And so you're going to take that group on that 80-20 rule, figure out who the top 20% is, divide that by the number of clients, look at their average assets, and you want to get clients that are just like them or better, equal to or better. Okay. Last thing. What did you value today? Mario.
Yep. I think for me, the best thing was, like you said, I think we were going a little crazy with giving away the leads. So I think that's going to get us a lot more organized. I think that we're going to be able to hire a lot of people towards this model and add people without an expense. And then I realized that I had absolutely zero plan, right? Like my current, when I send you my initial sheet that I, we basically were winging it.
Okay. I'm going to take care of you. Michael, what'd you value?
I muted myself. There we go. I think my part is just trying to translate the Supernova platform into our model and trying to start to see. And as leaders, I think the challenge I had is my problem is not 1,000 clients. My problem is 5,000 clients. Okay. And we don't really have a team to take that model, or I don't, right? Where we all combined don't have it to generate, to take 8,000 clients and start giving it to 80 advisors, right? So the idea maybe that is hiring, like you said, a service advisor, as well as hiring several advisors that can start working those books as well. So, long-term vision, that's what my thought is to start working towards as I cut down my servicing of my own, is to start using the hiring tool for my book.
Exactly. Okay. Brent, what do you think?
I mean, kind of echoing what Mike said. I mean, the thought of trying to segment the book, and I started doing it last week, is like, it gave me like anxiety because I have so many relationships with people, and the thought of saying, hey, like, I'm no longer servicing your account anymore kind of like was, I don't know, a little upsetting to me. But starting to, buy into this and slowly understand the process and try to figure out how I can do this.
You're not by yourself. Everybody I talk to, they go through it. Okay. Everybody we coach, they go through it. Don't try to wholesale give away people yet, but definitely get to that core. Okay. And, let's go with Lenny. Lenny, what did you value today?
Yeah. I think, obviously a lot of good takeaways. I took a lot of good notes. I think a thing that I valued the most was the 10 leads a week, I think is huge. Cause to me, we have such a big book. And when we do what I call communication night, I call communication because whether they're reaching out on LinkedIn, they're calling, or they're doing something, I think being able to structure them and to coach them more on how to do calls and get them comfortable calling, and hopefully that person will turn into an A client to a new advisor, can give us an ability to scale and hire a lot of people.
Okay. All right. So to sum up, we've been going through learning Supernova, learn a little bit about teams, and then learning about leadership, okay? That's kind of the trilateral process we're going through. You guys were good today. I appreciate your time, and I look forward to our next call.
Thank you so much.
You too. Right. Thank you.
Take care. Curtis.